The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. Today we're going to go a little bit beyond the general topics that we deal with on this show, and we're going to talk about the birth of modernity and the birth of modernism with the takeover of the city-state of Florence in Italy by the Medici family and their the opposition offered to this takeover by Savonarola. Now, I want to hold a bunch of things. We'd get to this in a minute, but I want to hold that this confrontation between Lorenzo and Piero de' Medici on the one hand and Savonarola on the other hand really will then typify the birth of the modern mind. That the Medici takeover of Florence, their so-called de facto rulership over this very, very powerful city-state, will define modernity from the Renaissance, when all this takes place, to our era. When I was teaching at Mount St. Mary's, I was asked to teach a course in the Renaissance and the early modern world. And although I had some background in that field, I wasn't a specialist in it, but I had a good reputation, and so I was given this job, and I really took to it. I began to see that the Renaissance, of course, had very little to do with the resurrection of the ideas of ancient Greece and Rome, as all the textbooks say about it. That's completely false. Greece and Rome were quite alive in every regard in the Middle Ages. It is a justification of materialism and the domination of the banks, specifically the Medici banks and the Fuggers in the north, over all aspects of political life, and justifying themselves in various ways. And one of the articles I'm going to be referencing today in this question of the birth of modernity and the Medici takeover is an article written in 1986 called Platonism in Renaissance Florence. And it isn't so much Platonism as such, but rather very selective aspects of the non-metaphysical parts of the Platonic system that were used by the Medicis in Florence to justify their power. And I think what you're going to see, I think there's a lot in what Alison Brown's article is saying back then that even she didn't fully grasp the implications of this completely illegitimate takeover of political power by the banks, the bank of the city. But the main implication is that this will become the pattern of modern life from the end of the 15th century to our own present day. In spite of all the different schools of thought coming and going and waxing and waning, the pattern laid down by the Medici Bank in its home city of Florence will be the pattern that all of us listening to this show in 2010 or 2011 or whenever are suffering under. And so in talking about this, I'm talking about the Medicis on the one hand and their prime and really only coherent opposition at the time, which is the Dominican monks of Savonarola, excommunicated and murdered by the creature of the Medicis, that is to say, the Pope of Rome, at the time. And this is really going to typify the battle that this broadcast, this radio show, will continue that in some sense the voice of Savonarola continues to inveigh against the banking clans and their domination over the state, their domination over Western society. And just to give a very small glimpse, our last presidential election between the hapless and indistinguishable John McCain and Barack Obama, both candidates were completely controlled and bankrolled by Goldman Sachs, who, as his major investment and banking firm, financed both campaigns. And if you go to the Federal Election Commission, FEC.gov, you could see this for yourself. Goldman Sachs financed both campaigns, and they were the main contributors in gross dollar amounts to both campaigns in the tens of millions of dollars. But this corruption, this fraud of democracy in the modern world, isn't anything new. The Medicis created this. And in dealing with Medici control, we're dealing with the pattern of the domination banks and other economic actors have over our lives, and in many ways, the way that most of us think. So we're going to be dealing with a general concept of the Medicis and how they justified themselves, specifically Lorenzo and Piero. And I talk about them only because they are co-determinists with Savonarola. In other words, they existed at the same time, and they really locked horns in philosophical combat, a combat that, to a great extent, dominated the discourse in 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century. And then the banks seem to have won a complete victory by the end of the 20th century. But speaking very generally, I want to say that to some very vague extent, this broadcast is going to be the continuation of the battle that Savonarola fought against the Medicis. And a lot of our intellectual and philosophical, theological and rhetorical arsenal still, in our own day, derives from that battle of Savonarola against the banking clan, the Medici clan that dominated Florence and ruled it from behind the scenes, while, of course, in general, maintaining all of the offices of old Republican Florence. And so they maintained this kind of shell of liberty, but in fact completely dominated the city. And that was, you know, Lorenzo's central idea, is to make sure that the people think that our control over the city is not in fact real, because the Republican institutions will continue to function. We'll just make sure in the background we will show how they are supposed to function and control their functioning so long as we're in power. And so in that regard, the Medici domination of Florence is identical to Goldman Sachs and their compatriots' domination over America and her political and social system. Goldman Sachs, again, all of these banking clans deriving to some extent from the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds could not have existed had not the Medicis laid down the pattern for how bankers can dominate a society while keeping the facade of Republican liberty as it had developed in Florence in existence. So the facade was there as window dressing for the common population, but real control was maintained in the hands of the Medici clan. Okay. The article by Brown in 1986 starts off with the idea that the Medicis were not legitimate rulers of the state. They were not. They dominated the government and the functioning of the system, including most of the major guilds, from behind the scenes. no different than bankers do today. But she also says something very profound. She makes the case that it was Republican theory, the way that it was defined in North Italy, the time of the flowering of the Renaissance, that somehow Republican theory and the use and manipulation of this by the Medicis and their apologists, this is what justified their rule, and specifically that they developed the idea that we still suffer with today, that the possession of money equals personal and professional success. And therefore, having this kind of personal and professional success means that you must have this extraordinary reserve of knowledge. You rule us because you have the money. But it doesn't stop there. The reasoning goes that we have the money because we have superior knowledge and abilities and this kind of financial acumen, which we all know is central to controlling a government and a state. What a lot of people don't know, and the textbooks normally don't say, about the Renaissance, is that as the Medicis dominated Florence and financed all of the artistic and scientific theories of that era, I mean, everyone from Michelangelo to Galileo was on the Medici payroll. We have to understand this. That's fairly well known, that they were financed by the oligarchs. However, public speeches, the time of the Medici domination, public speeches, which of course was the media of the day, were in front of the government palace in Florence, and all free citizens were required to attend. This is, of course, a form of propaganda. It would be something vaguely along the lines of saying you must watch CNN every night or you go to prison. And of course, these were all pro-Medici speakers coming in front of the legislative palace in Florence, and for all free citizens, that's to say, any citizen that had the ability to serve in office had to attend. The Medicis used Plato. Now, I'm a Platonist. I think a lot of medievalists are Platonists despite themselves. The Medicis were Platonists, but only of a sort. Plato did spend a lot of time talking about the justification of class society in the ideal state. You know, any freshman in college knows that. That doesn't say much about him. But for Plato, the distinctions among classes only concerned one's one's abilities in the philosophical life, precisely to go beyond the material world and contemplate that which is divine. This was at the core of everything Platonic. The Medicis inverted Plato and inverted him deliberately. All the nonsense about the Renaissance that you read in the textbooks, nothing is more absurd than that somehow this was a resurrection of Greek and Roman ideas. Nothing can be further from the truth. It was, if anything, the resurrection of materialism, bankers' control, and alchemy, which, of course, Plato had absolutely nothing to do with. He mocked that kind of pseudoscience. Plato, when you read him, when you understand him, and when you live that mentality, and I certainly did that in grad school, you realize that, of course, Plato was the very opposite of the Medici mentality. The Medicis cared about one thing, and that was the manipulation of the material world, which resolves itself in the complete domination of money in the physical world and deviousness and deceit in the mental world. So, for the Medicis to use Plato, and Alison Brown's article is brilliant because, you know, she says they're using Plato, even though Plato would have violently denounced their rule. but because Plato had something to say about the inequality of classes relative to their connection to the divine, to the immaterial, to the forms of all that are and their interrelation, that somehow that in some weird, twisted way has something to do with the domination of cash. It is an inversion of Plato, but in speaking to the masses, who, of course, you know, don't read Plato all day long, and there was a time when I did read Plato all day long, it is easy to use Plato in this inverted way. The Medicis laid out the pattern of rule in the modern world, and as they ran the state de facto, not de jure, is no different than the bankers in modern life. They rule from the background. The Medicis also ruled from the background. They hired an army of professional lawyers and bureaucrats that were hired for the sake of the manipulation and inversion of the traditional law of the state. And they can justify it through all kinds of philosophical subtleties. The point is that the Medicis inverted education for the sake of their own material interests. But that's not all they did. The Medicis, in their background world, I mean, they lived in an underworld, and that underworld dominated the skeleton of republican ideas and institutions that functioned in the city-state of Florence. They used an inversion of Plato to justify themselves as philosophical rulers. Now, they were definitely rulers, but they had to completely invert the definition of philosophy for the sake of their own self-justification. Philosophy, again, meant knowledge, and knowledge meant the manipulation of matter for the sake of their own selfish interests. Their selfish interests meaning the concentration of material wealth in their family for the sake of controlling not just Florence and not just North Italy, but the capillaries of financial strength in Britain and in France and anywhere that they can go. They had branch offices everywhere. And the French monarchy had reneged on all their debts. And because the French monarchy had reneged on all their debts, there was a war between the Medici clan and the French crown, and suddenly the oligarchy had a problem with monarchy, a problem that continues to this day. Because at least back then, at the end of the 15th century, monarchs still were more powerful than banks. And in the age of absolutism, that was going to follow on this, that was not going to be the case. The fact is that the bankers, the Medicis, and their successors throughout the world, Rothschilds being, of course, the largest and most powerful of their successors, their intellectual successors, so to speak, financed the development of absolutism. Absolutism meaning the domination of the state over everything, the destruction of corporate liberties, and the creation of what we may vaguely term totalitarianism, that is the state controlling all aspects of political life. The Medicis wanted the Florentines to believe that they were somehow the Platonic guardians, although Plato was very explicit on what he thought the guardians should be, that they are philosopher rulers with the flanks of armed guards. The Medicis had simply redefined philosophy to refer to the very opposite of divinity, and that is the deceit that comes from usury and the manipulation of money, the ability to buy power. The Medicis bought power and are the first modern example of money not only buying power, but then buying legitimacy. Florence, crawling out of the destruction of the Black Death in the 1380s, 90s, the beginning of the 15th century, the struggles with the guilds, the struggles with the revolutionary movement and the lower guilds, the Medici set themselves up in the background of Republican Florence for viewing themselves as the wise man, the legislator, the guardian of Florence, all of these being specifically Platonic terms. But you know, the way that Plato had understood it, the legislator, somebody along the lines of Solon, was above the law because he was the creator of the law. And the Medicis were holding to the idea that because of their control over money, they were ipso facto above the law in the sense that they created the law. The schools of magic and alchemy, Ficino, Bruno, many others, were financed by the Medicis. And the Medicis had the secret. The secret was that alchemy is a fraud because we know what the Philosopher's Stone truly is. It's money. And we know that alchemy wasn't really about turning lead into gold. It was about the manipulation of the masses in the interest of the banking elite. Those who accepted domination were the golden people, the enlightened, the cognoscenti. Those who rejected it were the leaden followers of Saturn, the ignorant, the obtuse. These concepts of alchemy were about the domination of Medici money over everything, religion, philosophy. Remember, the Medicis elected at least two popes. And the papacy at this time was financed by the Medicis, and you couldn't become pope unless you had the Medici money, and then you could buy that office. The concept even of merit in a republican system meant the approbation of the Medici clan. Money was the same thing as merit. It was the same thing as knowledge. Knowledge became the manipulation of matter for the sake of an oligarchy. It was the beginning of the scientific revolution. Galileo was financed by the Medicis. Money confronted the old aristocratic idea of military prowess, of solidarity, certainly of asceticism. And what you ended up having, the height of Medici power in Florence, in North Italy, you had this horribly cynical combination of an inverted Plato on the one hand with Thomas Hobbes on the other. You had a commitment to this kind of vague legal equality only so long as those who control the money existed and dominated anonymously in the background, whether it be the Medicis in the 15th and 16th century, the Rothschilds in the 18th, 19th, and 20th century, the Federal Reserve, and the Warburgs, yesterday and today, it's the same idea. Hobbes is mixed with an inverted Plato to create this hybrid monster, this Leviathan, the demons, Antichrist on earth, as Leviathan, as the word Leviathan, and Thomas Hobbes' famous work, also a little bit later in the Renaissance, strongly suggested. This is the rule of matter, where Plato in the Middle Ages had been about the rule of the spirit. So the Medicis wanted to use Plato for the sake of destroying him for their own purposes. Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about the reaction to this deceit by the great Dominican friar Savonarola and what his agenda was in his vehement opposition to this particular form of rule and the idea of Medici and banking dominance over republican societies. So hang in there. We will be right back.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on the Orthodox Nationalist.
¶¶
You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Orthodox Nationalist. We're talking about something that I used to teach on a regular basis in the university. We're talking about Renaissance history. Of course, I taught Russian and Ukrainian history and Balkan history full-time at the university. But as I said before, I was asked to teach a regularly recurring course on the Renaissance, and while initially hesitant, I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it for one reason, that in studying the Renaissance and early Enlightenment, or the early modern period, as we pretentiously call it, we come to understand where the specific set of ideas that we know as modernity or modernism come from, and how wicked, in fact, how polluted the source of all of this really is, and that that source is in the Medici domination of Florence. And that Medici domination of Florence in the academic world is known by the name of the Renaissance. My sources here, there's a lot of work on Savonarola out there, but my two favorites are an article written in 1908 by Thomas Davidson and a book by George McHardy published in 1901. But there's just a mountain of stuff on him out there. But these are really the sort of the foundational early work on Savonarola and his battle against the Medici clan and what that meant for Italy, the papacy, and eventually his own torture and murder at the hands both of Pope Alexander and the Medici clan themselves. And he was tortured for several days and finally murdered in 1498 at the age of 45. Savonarola was the leader of the Christian medievalist assault on the Medicis at the very end of the 15th century in Florence. He was a charismatic preacher, a monk of the Dominican order, and a warrior against this institutionalized deceit that was the Renaissance, that is to say, the Medici control of the city-state of Florence, which was the epicenter of what is, with this horrible twisting of history called somehow the Renaissance. There's, of course, nothing but the domination of alchemy and materialism and deceit over the body politic. Savonarola, what we could do here, really the best way to deal with a man as complex and as historically significant as him, the only thing we could do is really kind of outline his general political and social ideas relative to his confrontation of the Medici clan. And the simple fact is that anybody who wants to live the Orthodox Christian life in this day and age has to, in some regard, in some way, take up the mantle of Savonarola. Now, I'm not saying that he was an Orthodox man. He was not. But he embodied the best of Western Catholicism in the late Middle Ages. And he was a medievalist in his vision. And he used that basic medievalism as a cudgel, against what we can call modernism now, or the domination of the banks over the body politic in that city-state. You see, Savonarola starts with the idea, and we're still making this argument today, that when a Medici or one of their supporters talks about the idea of personal liberty or individualism or something like that, they're really only justifying the rule of the rich and powerful. Talking about individualism of the poor doesn't make any sense, because as individuals, the poor don't matter. The only people who matter as individuals are people like Warren Buffett, people like Lorenzo de' Medici. If you want to somehow liberate the individual from the shackles of custom and tradition and religion, all you end up doing is enshrining an oligarchy, because their individualism from the point of view of money and political power means a lot more than my individualism. Personal liberty is just a code word for the domination of the rich and the powerful. Savonarola viewed himself as one of the Old Testament prophets trying to call back what Christianity was left in Florence. Remember, the Medicis were open pagans. I mean, they, you know, financed churches and they financed monastic houses and everything else, but that was just a sham. They were also financing alchemy. They believed in the domination of that which was material over everything else. And in fact, the life of the spirit should be redefined by the interests of the material. The material is the base. Everything else is just a superstructure. Savonarola, in his preaching, in his confrontation, his sometimes physical, personal confrontation with the leaders of the Medici clan, he said that the Christianity is dead in Florence and only pagan money worship exists. Christ is gone from Florence and the pagan Bacchanal reigns supreme. Remember, Apollo and Dionysius are the same person, at least philosophically speaking. They are two aspects of the same thing, because, we could say that Apollo is a referent to geometry, to the creation of cities, to the creation of economics and natural science. And yet Dionysius, in some regard, or Bacchus, to use his other name, is the ritualization of that power through alcohol and an in-group kind of almost sexual contact. They're really the same idea, the domination of the elite, at least as it manifested itself in Florence, that Apollo and Dionysius really are the same person, just seen from two very different points of view. He wanted the rich to give away their money and their luxury. Luxury is not going to help them, and it's certainly not going to help the city. The moral and religious good of a people has got to come first. Everything else has to be built on that very strong foundation. And that the worst thing in the world to say to a community, a city-state, is that private interests should reign supreme. Because it's an absurdity. When you say something like private interest should be the only interest, what you mean is that the private interests of those already with money and power then have justified their rule over you. If you say that individualism rules, then you say those whose individuality matters more than you now justify their rule and control over you. There's no way out of that. But the worst thing for Savonarola was the fact that these oligarchical families throughout northern Italy controlled the papacy and would finance different papal candidates, and that candidate with the most money would win the office. Savonarola saw his beloved Roman church now nothing but a Babylonian prostitute. No one, I don't care how Roman Catholic you think you are, nobody can justify the way that Renaissance popes were elected. We know that two popes, Leo X, clearly, and his successor, were actually not only financed and controlled by the Medicis, but in fact were Medicis themselves. Alexander VI is no different than that, though not a Medici. He was a Spaniard. He was financed heavily with Medici and oligarchical money from Italy. And the Roman Curia became really one long bacchanal, having absolutely nothing to do with the Christian faith whatsoever. And this is the papacy that will eventually assault, torture, and murder Savonarola. This is the natural trajectory of this concept of unlimited papal power over all Christendom. Because if we're going to be consistent here, we have to understand what papacy is. Papacy says that there is a church and that there is a pope who controls the church. The pope is not part of the church. He dominates the church. He is above the law. He is above emperors. He is above, in fact, everything other than God himself. He is the very speaker, spokesman, almost the manifestation of God on earth. And if we're to take that seriously, then the personal behavior of the popes has absolutely nothing to do with their authority. This is where Savonarola drew the line. One of my theses concerning the Western Church is simply this. Had the conciliar movement in the 15th century been accepted in one form or another, and failing that, the criticisms of Savonarola a little bit after that, had that been heeded in some sense by the Church of Rome, there would have been no Martin Luther. There would have been no Reformation. Had the conciliar principle, the idea of the general synod, the governing council with the Pope at its head, had that came to rule Western Christendom, there would have been no Anglicanism, there would have been no Lutheranism, there would have been no Calvinism. And even more than that, the chances of a rapprochement with the Eastern Church would have been possible. Of course, remember, the time we're talking about, the Eastern Church, for the most part, with the exception of Russia, was under the control of the Turks. It's a bit of a complicating factor. But still, the concept remains. The conciliar movement and Savonarola, which in a vague way was the successor of the conciliar movement, had they won, rather than pure untrammeled papacy, there would have been no Reformation. And you could debate that all you want. That's my contention. And you clearly see this borne out in the torture and murder of Savonarola. Eventually, he attacked the papacy and the College of Cardinals, not because he disagreed with the institutions. He accepted the idea of papacy. The problem was, is that they weren't acting like apostles. And to go around yelling words like Donatism doesn't help anybody. Savonarola is one of these very pious, very intelligent, very sensitive and scrupulous figures who could not handle the idea of the Pope of Rome being a multimillionaire. Or any bishop being a multimillionaire, having a personal bank account worth millions and millions. In the Orthodox Church, we have this today. Many bishops are worth millions, even though they're supposed to be monks and not have anything. Philip Saliba, this ridiculous metropolitan of the Antiochians in America, living in New Jersey, admits that he's worth millions of dollars. Where did those millions come from? He had to have extorted it in some sense out of his parishes. It's all fraud. The doctrine is right. The doctrine is true, but the way that these people behave is absolutely outrageous. Savonarola. I mean, people like, you know, Pope Alexander, they spent a lot of time asking themselves, you know, what can we get this guy on? They couldn't get him on doctrine because he was 100% Catholic. And yet what he could not handle was the fact of politicians and popes and cardinals and other bishops in the area living like multimillionaire potentates. In fact, they were multimillionaire potentates. Potentates, if you want to use that pronunciation. You know, this is what he couldn't handle. In fact, Pope Alexander VI threatened to put the entire city of Florence under interdict if they didn't hand over Savonarola. The fact is, Savonarola was immensely popular. He identified the Medici for what they were. He identified materialism for what it was, the worship and domination and control of cash over everything, and by extension, the worship of those who have the cash. I mean, at least Lorenzo de Medici wanted to maintain the facade of Republican Florence, but his successor, Piero, who died in 1503, just a little bit after Savonarola, he wanted to get rid of that and just rule as a banking dictator. I mean, that's how far the arrogance had gone in Florence by the beginning of the 16th century. There was one thing that came to save Savonarola, and in 1494, Charles VIII of France took Florence. But the Florentines had, through their banking control, thrown in their lot with the corrupted papacy, and as a result, invited the invasion of France in North Italy. Savonarola ultimately was disappointed by the behavior, not so much of Charles, but his men in North Italy. But more significantly, he followed the mentality of the Old Testament prophets by saying that his invasion is just recompense for your absurd, horrible, oligarchic, and almost dictatorial behavior over the people of this part of the world. Savonarola confronted the Medici clan. He called them liars. He called them fakes because they were preaching the idea of the liberty of conscience and liberty of science and republicanism while at the same time prostituting all of those things for their particular social and political agenda. And I'm here to say that there is no distinction between the Medici mentality at the end of the 15th century and the mentality of Goldman Sachs in 2010. It's the same idea. You have to maintain, as Lorenzo would say, you have to maintain the facade of republicanism. Keep the offices elective. We'll make sure that the right guy gets elected. Keep the media in private hands. We'll make sure that the right hands get to control the media. Keep the judiciary independent because we'll make sure that the right people sit on the courts. This was the Medici idea. This is the very core of modernism because it's the very core of what the fraudsters in academia will call the Renaissance. The Renaissance is nothing other than the papering over of the fraudulent Western cognoscenti of the fact that modernity was created by the domination of a banking and financial class over the political and economic world of Europe. And not only has it not recovered, it's gotten infinitely worse. We're talking about 500 years of this. This is the general cause of the destruction of European Christendom and the European idea, however you might want to define that, because ultimately the religion of Europe became not Jesus Christ, it became the dollar. They may have claimed that this is Christian, no different than the Republicans may claim that today. It doesn't paper over the fact that it's a complete fraud and that is a complete lie. So what I'm saying is that our mission is to follow in the footsteps of Savonarola, to fearlessly denounce the evils of the regime. Don't worry about what happens to you. Savonarola was tortured and murdered at the orders of the papacy for his condemnation of papal arrogance, of the arrogance of the Medici clan. Savonarola was a true hero. He was a true hero because he believed that God had given him this commission to confront the evils of the day. Had he won, there would have been no Reformation. And had there been no Reformation, there would still, to this day, be a united Christian militant Europe. And in my opinion, an eventual rapprochement with the Eastern Church, especially when the Turkish threat began to wane in the 18th century. Anyway, we have covered what I think is the very genesis of the modern mind in the Medici control over Florence and its negation in the mentality of Savonarola. I invite you to read more about this man, to read more about his confrontation, his medievalist Christian confrontation against the materialism of the Medicis, because we're still 500 years later, still in this same fight. And if one man, Savonarola, can create a huge reformation of morals and the mentality in Florence, and he did do this as one of the most popular people in Italian history, a genuine populist that Savonarola was, if he can do this, then we can do this. So, until next time, my friends, hang in there. God bless, and I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned in to Radio Aryan.